To my dearest friends, I am thrilled for you to have joined me on this investigation into one of the most ancient events of the stars. Time and time again, we have delved into the secrets of the 41st millennium, primarily looking into more recent of historical events which have thus far shaped the political landscape of the galaxy into its current state. But for today, we could not possibly learn of our topic by remaining within this time frame. Even if we were to look back through the millennia, or to cast our gaze back for millions of years, we would still be yet to reach our target. And so instead, we must beseech Great Father Time to turn back his great clock, as our story is said to begin at the inception of the very universe itself. The truly primordial beings, which we shall soon uncover, would be none other than of the venerable star gods themselves, which in our tongue have been named as the Catan. Within the churning fields of cosmic energy in which no worlds, stars, or galaxies had formed, the first sentient beings to have coalesced within the tempest were the elemental gods, who would go on to leave an indelible mark upon the history of all who encountered them. At this point, they simply drifted through the molten stellar oceans, growing drunk on the endless wellspring of energy which surrounded them. But this inexplicable species was not to remain within this form forever. As many of you know, their race became intimately tied with the cybernetic legions of the Necrons. And through their infamous relationship, both groups left an irreversible scar on the other, redefining what it meant to stand as both Necron and as a Catan. Their stories are so intertwined that it would be impossible to speak of one faction without first mentioning the influence held by the other, yet their ancient ties have since shifted. And from our research, it seems that the Catan will now remain in a purely servile position, and they will never again be free to stand as the undisputed gods of reality. But there is much to discuss on this topic, and so we should begin with haste. My friends, please sit back and relax as we sail through the long eons, as we learn of the cataclysmic events of the war in heaven. We begin in the endless void. No time passes. There are no stars, nor even stray particles of matter. There is no warp, nor webway, no gods, nor masters. There is simply nothing. But then, in one single moment, the abyss exploded in an unparalleled flash of energy, and reality itself burst outwards. The cosmic expanse was no longer bereft of matter, and instead, it was a writhing, dense sphere of plasma. Such was the incomprehensible pressure and heat within this swell that not even the most basic of constituent particles could take form, as instead, the chaotic tempests were simply too disordered for anything to attain some form of stability. Within this turbulent ocean, however, but a single entity was able to find purchase, and this monstrosity was the first of the Catan. We know not of this antecedent creature's name, nor of their first thoughts upon cosmic birth, but they were not to survive amidst this storm alone. With each passing moment, more and more of the blazing figures came into being, emerging through the plasmic currents as graceful shadows, unopposed by any and master to all. It should come as no surprise to you, but during this time in universal history, we have no clear idea as to what form the Catan first manifested as. They were beings who dwelled within a torrid sea of cosmic energy, with the average temperatures of this primordial soup being around 10 billion degrees Celsius. So we can only speculate as to how these beings may have looked during these early days. Some believe that they were akin to glowing clouds, drifting through the flaming waves of light, being carried through the ever-expanding universe by some hitherto unknown force. Others have posited that they would be seen as great bloated parasites of cosmic energy, who could manipulate their syrupy surroundings to traverse their own realm. Based on their future feeding habits, I personally believe that during this phase of our universe, that they could passively feed on the flowing tides of plasma, absorbing the free energy of reality itself as though it was an endless wellspring of sustenance. This period, however, was not able to last forever. With the expansion of our universe, the boiling soup of energy was able to cool, and as it condensed, the first particles, atoms, and compounds could take form. After around 200 million years of this cooling period, this matter had further coalesced into the primordial stars, which we would recognize from our own astronomical studies. But from this, the feeding methods of the Catan had to change. They could no longer absorb the ambient energy of the dense void. And instead, they would move to devour the young stars themselves. We do not know of how this process occurred, but the antecedent entities would embrace the nuclear gifts of these celestial bodies, sapping their blazing energies until the glowing orb had given all it could, leaving it as a cold, empty core, bereft of activity or light. As time continued to march on, the Catan learned of how to reform their own shape, transfiguring their bodies to match new forms that could more easily sail through the stellar winds, jumping from star to star, endlessly feasting at such a rate that, in time, they may have reduced the universe into a lightless abyss once more. This, however, would not come to pass. Their era of cosmic dominance lasted for eons. However, as the first planets took shape, and as the Milky Way itself finally took form, the Catan were destined to encounter another sentient species who would be known as the Necrontyr. As the galaxy of the Milky Way matured over the passing ages, it soon became clear that though the Catan were indeed primordial to all others, that they were not the sole inhabitants of the void. Upon the many young worlds orbiting their still juvenile stars, life erupted outwards, producing a dazzling display of microbes, plants, animals, and most importantly, sentient alien beings. There were many who rose and fell during this time, but perhaps the two most famous species would be of the so-called Old Ones and of the Necrontyr. The former were a race of enigmatic, cold-blooded creatures who, during their epoch, rapidly arose to master the various sciences and secrets of reality, allowing them to manipulate their surroundings to form what was perhaps the first galactic civilization of the Milky Way. Their achievements were truly monumental, and some archaeohistorians would boldly claim that none have since eclipsed their glory, though this would clearly be a highly heretical point of view. They were the architects of the labyrinthine webway. Their weaponry could shake the very stars themselves, and their proficiency in the fields of biology had allowed them to produce many venerable species to serve them, the most well-known of which would be the Eldari, and the Crawks. But their might did not go unnoticed. Upon a wayward world, blasted by the ionizing glare of its parental star, the ancient species of the Necrontyr had come into being. Though all life is sacred, perhaps these decrepit humanoids were in fact doomed from the start. All would eventually succumb to the agonizing sicknesses of radiation poisoning, forcing them to live short, sad lives within enlarged tombs, where they would spend their days simply waiting for the inevitable curse of death. Though their scientists had tried to alter their nature in such a way to save them, They simply did not possess the means to conquer this malady, and so they were compelled to reach outwards to discover as to whether or not the void itself harbored their own salvation. As their race mastered spaceflight, they ventured into their nearby star systems, entombed within stasis crypts, which would float for hundreds of slow, pitiful years, before finally arriving on forlorn planets, though even here their salvation could not be found. Their very biology had been tainted by their homeworld, and despite moving far from that radioactive wasteland, cancerous growths would still plague them, making this entire effort seem almost futile. That was until they encountered the Old Ones. They had finally met with a species who had conquered the void, and though it was most dishonorable, they beseeched the ancient figures for aid in curing their rampant diseases. The Old Ones, however, were not ones to share in their secrets. They rejected the pleas of the Necrontyr, slipping back through the webway to be free from the miserable presence of these sickly creatures. Yet this would soon spark a war which would forever change the face of the galaxy. Rejecting their call for aid was somewhat unusual for the Old Ones, as they had been known to uplift the weaker species of the void if they believed that it would provide some benefit to the wider galaxy. Clearly, however, they saw these mercurial and deathly figures as being just as cruel as their own accursed star, and so they resolved to abandon them, likely hoping that they would simply succumb to their own fates and fall into extinction. The Necrontyr, utterly enraged at their denial of life, decided that if the Old Ones would not share in their gifts of immortality, then they too would be forced to die. The many colonies of their young empire were united in their efforts, and with a resounding cry to action, the two species came together as they sparked the war in heaven. Though emboldened by the potential of attaining immortality, this was never a conflict which the feeble Necrontyr could ever hope to win. They simply did not possess the technological means to outmaneuver the Old Ones, who would emerge from the webway to devastate the pathetic ships of this race, until their minor armies and colonies had been utterly decimated, leaving only a scant few survivors to collect their remains. From here, the Necrontyr were banished back to the dark region known as the Halo Stars, where any attempts at attaining freedom would be quickly curtailed, leaving them to simply stew in rage, plotting as to how they may finally attain vengeance over the Old Ones. It is said that the hatred which they developed here eventually eclipsed that of the Old Ones themselves, and instead grew into a revulsion to all life, including even their own. Thousands of years passed in cold isolation. The newly exiled Necrontyr could do little but rage at their malign state, enforced by an arrogant species who seemed to have simply decided on a whim that some creatures were not deserving of holding a life free from death. Yet, despite their position, the arrogance of the Old Ones seemed to have provided some form of grace. Even though the Old Ones were undoubtedly the dominant civilization within the galaxy, as time went on, they had grown complacent in their containment over the Necrontyr. Thus, many of the stasis ships were able to slip through into the wider void, forming new colonies, led by an increasingly large repertoire of dynastic lords, some of whom had developed an innate distrust to the leading nobles of the Triarch. They no longer believed in the self-appointed lordship of these fools, who had simply led them to defeat at the hands of a race who withheld the secrets of immortality. As such, the fledgling empire of the Necrontyr grew fractured, with new dynasties claiming vast swathes of territory for their own personal glory. This sparked an immense civil war within their species, with entire dynastic lineages being reduced to ash by the relentless approach of their enraged, bloodthirsting kin. As the conflict dragged on, it seemed less and less likely that the rival nobles would ever relent in their familial war. There was no reason for the dynasties to order their troops to retreat, as their entire species had seemingly lost its purpose. They knew that they were destined to die from sickness, and that immortality was simply out of their reach, so all they had left was to wage war with one another, hoping to carve out some semblance of majesty before they succumbed to disease. That was the case until the ruling triarch finally took a desperate measure to unify their barbarous species. The council needed some grand endeavor to eclipse the petty dynastic wars, and they understood that the only prize which could possibly garner the attention of all would be for the secrets of immortality. Thus, as their last gambit, the triarchs committed their species to one final battle, declaring that their kind would this time wrench the secrets of the old ones from their cold, dead hands, and in this action they reignited the war in heaven and bathed the galaxy in blood. Though their species was scattered over the long years of exile, they had rapidly advanced in their knowledge of the various scientific fields. All of their discoveries, however, had been made with the intention of producing weapons of war, which they knew would one day be levied against the old ones. And even though their species was markedly primitive when compared to the galactic ancients, they were still able to quake the stars with their attack. It would soon turn out, however, that their prototype doomsday weapons were still seen as little more than playthings when compared to the advancements of the old ones. It did not matter that they could bombard a mighty fleet into dust if their adversaries would simply evade every attack through their mastery of the webway. And so this renewed phase of the war in heaven went much in the same way as the last. The Necrontyr were beaten back in every battle, though this time the old ones were far less likely to resolve the war with a simple banishment. It seemed instead that they would do the unthinkable and entirely exterminate the sickly mortals, freeing the galaxy from the hateful approach of this species once and for all. Perhaps they would have indeed fallen to be forgotten by history, but the destiny of the Necrontyr was soon shifted, and this only occurred due to the emergence of a new silent king, a man who went by the name of Zarek. He had arisen as the head of the Zarekan dynasty, and looking out across his empire, it seemed that he would be the final lord who would oversee their eventual and certain defeat. But this was not to be the case. The scientists of the Necrontyr, during their studies into discovering new weapons to be used against the old ones, had detected a most curious anomaly around several of the dying stars of the galaxy. Great celestial bodies, which by all accounts should have shone brightly, were instead moving into their final stages of life at a rate which simply defied all expectations. The culprit for this phenomena, however, was indeed none other than the Catan. Within that etheric skein of nuclear energy, there was found to be the spark of life. It was quickly identified as a primordial species, noted as being more ancient than of any other life form ever previously encountered, predating even the old ones themselves by a truly impossible factor. At this point, however, the Necrontyr scientists believed that, though sentient, that these parasitic clouds of energy were barely cognizant of the wider events of the galaxy. The primeval beasts would endlessly draw strength from the blazing solar flares and magnetic storms of their sun, draining them as though they were parasitic vampires lodged around one's neck. But from their essence, the Necrontyr believed that they had finally found salvation. We are not sure as to how this feeble species managed to form a line of communication to the ancient star gods, and in fact, historians within the 41st millennium hold two leading theories as to the nature of this occurrence. Trazin, the infinite Lord of Solemnness, possesses an account which reads that their meeting was simply accidental, and it was purely by chance that the entities were discovered during this climactic hour. The Eldari, however, have written a tome known as the Book of Mournful Night, which reads that the Catan could sense the raw, unbridled hatred of the Necrontyr, and that they only presented themselves to their species when their proverbial beacon of rage reached its apex. They believe that the events which later transpired were all orchestrated by the Catan, and that they required the Necrontyr to be utterly disorganized and desperate for aid, at which point they would be susceptible to any suggestion, no matter how dark it may be. A third theory, however, kept in some of the older, outdated codices of humanity, tells us that the Necrontyr had always maintained a constant study over their own stars, in the hopes that they would be able to discover a method for preventing its ionizing glare from devastating their species. These scribes believe that it was somewhat inevitable for the two to eventually meet. But, as I stated, this theory is fairly outdated and was written at a time where we knew very little about the true lore of the hateful Necrons. But regardless of the nature behind their meeting, the Necrontyr had made contact with one of the Catan, an entity named as Azagorod, though in their tongue he was known as the Nightbringer. Legends say that this star god had adapted its cosmic form around the sun of the Necrontyr homeworld, and so perhaps we may speculate that the parasitic feasting of this creature may have been the causative event which led to the star emitting such an overwhelming blare of ionizing radiation, thus inadvertently causing the lead-up to the war in heaven. But this is a point which I do not believe that we will ever be able to prove. Nevertheless, the Nightbringer was posed with an opportunity. The Necrontyr offered this primordial god with a new body, forged of living metal, in the desperate hope that if this divine entity could be reformed into a weapon, that it may tip the scales of war against the old ones. As the primeval being manifested within its new corporeal vessel, it quickly discovered that there was a far greater feast to be had, and its taste for flavorless starlight now seemed to pale in comparison to that of fear and dread. It slaughtered the Necrontyr, who foolishly believed that an alliance would be possible, growing drunk on the delectable taste of raw emotion given off by those who saw its approach. We do not know of how long this lasted, but the exhilaration to be found in draining the life force of the mortal masses was simply too enticing to ignore. Eventually, however, the Necrontyr, now desperate to end this rampage, threw themselves down in servitude, pledging their species to aid the Nightbringer in waging a great war across the galaxy. They claimed that it would be able to feast upon an untold bounty of mortals, even going so far as providing an offering of an old one as a tantalizing appetizer of what could be achieved from their new partnership. Though this bargain would rob the Necrontyr of their freedom, it was ultimately successful in putting a halt to the madness of the Nightbringer. And it proved that this could be the final weapon which would ultimately win them the war in heaven. Thus, in the following years, many more of the Catan were sourced and provided with a necrodermis frame. They would stride into battle against the old ones, decimating the cold-blooded ancients, draining them of their sumptuous souls, finally feasting upon a form of energy which could empower them to new heights of dominance. At this point, with the newly entombed gods now venting their powers throughout the stars, the war in heaven moved into its most cataclysmic stage. None could be kept safe from the flames of celestial conflict, as the divine energies of the Catan were levied against a race which had conquered the very nature of reality itself. Both sides held truly apocalyptic weapons, with the old ones utilizing every forbidden tool at their disposal. Yet this would soon prove itself to be no match when stacked up against the primordial gods of our universe. The records which we hold of this war are primarily taken from the ancient Necron recordings on Solemnus and from the secretive Eldari tomes in the Black Library. Yet there are even scattered tales which persisted into the 41st millennium, being carried down as mere myths from the more ignorant species of the stars. But to be clear, the sheer level of destruction rent across the galaxy was one which had not been seen since the birth of reality itself. The Catan, channeling the baleful energies from a time long before even atoms first took shape, could simply annihilate entire star systems in but the blink of an eye. Worlds harboring the prosperous gleaming cities of the old ones fell to dust, being sucked into their own parental stars, which themselves were then forced to implode inwards before erupting into great supernova, scarring the void with their blazing expanse. Simple phrases told in a tongue beyond all comprehension were used to fling great black holes through the abyssal reaches, tearing apart solar systems, carving deep wounds in the very fabric of space. Entire star clusters were pulled together, unleashing waves of terrible energies to flow outwards through the galaxy as an eradicative tsunami. None could be spared. Even with all they possessed, the old ones were but pathetic gnats raging against the primordial gods who had now developed a most vampiric taste for their bright, shining souls. As the war raged, they were forced to finally flee into the webway to replan their attack, finding a brief reprieve from the assault of the star gods, who were at this point unable to breach its extra-dimensional tangle. But now, as the old ones fled from sight, the pernicious gaze of the Catan had shifted, and they now spied a greater bounty to be claimed in the souls of the Necrontyr. One of their kind, a star god who was named to the mortals as Mephetran the Messenger, descended to speak directly with the ruling council of the Triarch, offering up that one final treasure which their kind had long so sought. The messenger spoke softly, telling them that this was not the first time the Catan and old ones had fought, yet according to our records, this itself may have been a most malicious lie. The being claimed that their victory was not guaranteed, and that in order to turn the tides of battle, that they would require their subservient Necrontyr to ascend beyond their mortal form and arise as undying kings who could stride alongside the Catan forevermore as equal lords to all of reality. Whilst this was clearly a most enticing thought, this primordial god had a second nefarious intention behind the grand offer. Though this being was the messenger to the mortals, in the impossible lexicon of the Catan, they went by a different name, and this figure was known as the Deceiver. Some have speculated that the entirety of the war in heaven had been orchestrated by this being, but alas, we will never know the true extent to their involvement. Regardless of this, the Necrontyr were now finally on the cusp of achieving immortality, shedding their racked, feeble bodies once and for all, finally to be free from the curses of sickness and disease which had marred their species since it first took form. The Deceiver had proposed for a grand undertaking known as the Biotransference, where all would transplant their souls and minds into new frames of living metal, constructed out of the same material which now held the star gods themselves, and in doing so, death would become but an ancient memory of a primitive age. The Council of the Triarchs conversed with the many dynastic lords of the galaxy, who were understandably overwhelmingly in favor of proceeding with this immortal salvation. The only Necrontyr who spoke out against their plan was of the court astrologer to Zarek himself, a man known as Orican the Diviner. But his words simply rang hollow against the monumental potential of finally achieving immortality, and so, in one fateful decision, the Silent King ordained for the biotransference to commence, and their species was forever changed, for good and for worse. It fell to the cryptek named as Seras to oversee the transformation. He watched as behemothic towers were erected, within which the churning bioforges could be found, and from their fires would the Necrontyr leave their bodies to arise immortal. As the completion of this project neared its end, there was a second voice who spoke out in opposition to its plan. The Pharaon of the Amunos dynasty, Nefreth the Untouched, had been free from the taint of cancerous malignity his entire life, and he believed that through his flesh would his species find an alternate method for curing themselves of their eternal plague. Thus, in an act of desperation, he declared his own war against the Catan, rallying others to his cause, hoping that their species would come to their senses and realize that there was some form of sanctity to be held in preserving one's own flesh and blood. But even this was not as it seemed. Nefreth was not who he claimed to be. Though at one time he was indeed the Necrontyr lord of the Amunos, during his early infancy it was none other than the Catan known as the Deceiver, who switched out his body for a small shard of the star god. The primeval entity had planned to spark this rebellious war, as it would draw all of the Necrontyr dissidents together from where they could be easily exterminated, leaving the rest of their species to be loyal, unwavering servants to their new gods. With the defeat of the duplicitous lord, the biotransference could begin with earnest. First, it was the nobles who so boldly strode into the biofurnaces. There are only scattered rumors as to the actual events which occurred within their fires, but as they entered, their bodies were incinerated in another worldly inferno of arcane energy. Falling to ash, their minds, memories, and personalities were entombed within the finest of living metal shells, and as they emerged, they were no longer Necrontyr, but instead they were the undying legion of the Necrons. Though the lords themselves were provided with magnificent perfected bodies, the lesser population were not treated with the same sense of grace. Many were rounded up in floating ghost arcs, their limbs being shattered to prevent them from fleeing at the final moment. And these servile masses were only given relatively crude frames, which, whilst still made them immortal, heavily limited their cognitive capacity. As such, a huge swathe of their populace had been reduced from once vibrant, enigmatic individuals down into lobotomized slaves who could only exist to serve their masters forevermore. As the Silent King Zarek himself strode out from the biofurnace, now enshrined within a new perfected frame, he made a realization most dark. Though, yes, his memories and personality were intact, there was now a hollow void within his heart, as during this process, he had been robbed of his very soul. The entire Necrontyr species, in fact, had been sapped of their ethereal life essence, and what good could be found in immortality if one has since been cursed to wander, bereft of a soul? His horror only grew in scale when he saw that above the great biofurnaces that the Catan were engaging in a feast beyond compare. They had descended to devour the stolen souls of the entire Necrontyr species, growing bloated and drunk on the consumption of billions, ascending them ever higher into a new plane of impossible power. But the act was done, and there could be no reversal of this most accursed process. All that stood now were of the undying Necrons, trapped within immortal frames, lacking in purpose, and now victims to the wills and wishes of the Catan. They had lost their autonomy, their freedom, and even their very souls. Yet this was not the time to lament, as the war in heaven was still raging throughout the stars. The Catan and their newly shackled Necron legions renewed in their assault against the old ones, intent on finally purging them from the galaxy, positioning only the ancient star gods as the undisputed rulers of the void. Though victory now seemed to be inevitable, all was not well within the ranks of the Necrons. The shackled masses were ignorant to their own state, their engrammatic pathways only allowing them to act as rudimentary servants to their superiors. But for the Lords, they were all too well aware of their current position. They knew that they had been betrayed by the Deceiver, and that their newfound immortality had come at an indescribable cost. Yet, they would soon be provided with the perfect environment in which to find freedom from their baleful gods. Even as the Catan and the Necrons swept out across the galaxy, the Deceiver, ever a capricious figure, was not content to end its shady dealings. There would likely never be another grand feast to the same scale as the Necrontyr. And so, this sinister Catan convinced their fellow star gods that if they were to prey upon one another, that they would be provided with a banquet beyond compare. Thus, the ravenous Catan fell to infighting, devouring one another, leaving only the strongest and most capable of the ancient gods to stand as the tall lords to all others. But in their moment of weakness, the old ones struck back. In their own act of desperation, they uplifted several of the primitive races of the galaxy, including the enigmatic Eldari, recruiting them as a new army to be used against the relentless Catan. A select few of these species were altered in such a way that they would become sensitive to the flowing tides of the Empyrean, thus creating the first psykers of the galaxy. This, however, carried many unforeseen consequences. As the young races meddled with the flowing tides of that swirling dimension, drawing powers to be used against their enemies, it shifted in its very nature. It could no longer persist as a realm of calm, free-flowing energies, and instead it contorted and transformed from a realm of peace into the chaotic hellscape of the warp. It is said that the first of the demons took form here, drawing from the emotional agony of the stars, eager to escape and slaughter the mortal fools who dared to intrude upon their realm. It was at this point during the conflict that many of the most destructive weapons of the Catan and of the Old Ones were unleashed upon the stars, leaving immense scars upon reality itself, some of which have persisted for so long that their marks can still be seen in the grim darkness of the 41st millennium. Such was their scale that some believe these stellar weapons were seen by the newly uplifted Eldari as being divine in their own right. They believe that their errant cataclysmic energies coalesced to form the many gods of the Elder Pantheon, conjuring forth a new stream of deific lords who would do battle with the Catan for the rightful ownership of the stars. Legends say that it was from this war that the Eye of Terror was first rent into existence as a malign wound left from some cosmic doomsday device, exposing the now twisted warp unto reality itself. As it burst open, the infernal dimension of the warp was finally permitted to spill outwards, and the lines between reality and of the immaterium blurred for the first time in history. Legions of warp-born horrors spilled outwards, cleaving through the forces of the Catan and old ones alike, compelling the star god known as Magladroth, the Void Dragon, to seal away the warp storm by erecting a series of blackstone pylons to surround its rift. Even as the Eye was ultimately closed, as we all know, in the far future, it would once again reopen, with the birth cry of Slaanesh rending this cosmic wound open, spilling the warp back into our galaxy, at a pace which does not seem likely to stop. This, however, was done far too late. Though the Eye was indeed closed, the otherworldly demons had left a bloody scar upon both sides, yet they seemed to overwhelmingly favor their attacks upon the Catan. This was likely because the star gods had grown so bloated from their consumption of billions of mortal souls that they shone as unparalleled beacons of light to the Neverborn, who would voraciously feast upon this salubrious bounty of life energy. Seeking a method of banishing the demons, the Catan implanted a curious mutation within an unremarkable species of tree-dwelling mammals found on a nondescript world, and in time, this would develop into the pariah gene, creating a subsect of their kind, who would exist as an anathema to the warp itself. There was one warp-born race, however, which posed a far more dire threat than of their kin. It was here that the enslavers slithered out of the immaterium, stealing the minds of any mortals they found and breaking open the minds of psychers to bring more of their kind into reality. This species would persist as a malignant plague upon the stars, which battered the old ones and their allies, to the point where they required a far more tangible weapon to possibly counter them. Thus, the old ones were said to have, at this point, created the Kroks. They were to be the final frenzied counter to the enslavers, and by their very nature, the Kroks would be a living weapon. Lumbering out as immense brutes, standing as high as 12 meters in height, they would be expected to devastate the many enemies of the Great War, and in their deaths, they could simply release new spores, which would soon mature into a new stock of Kroks to emerge and do battle once more. But at this point, the old ones had relented in their attack. Reality itself was becoming far too hostile to dwell within, and so instead, they slipped away and departed from this very dimension. They believed that safety could once again be found by retreating into the webway, where they would lick their wounds and replan a new offensive. But this time, they would not be provided with such grace. The Catan, known as Nyadrazatha, the Burning One, erected a series of stone portals known as Dolmen Gates, which could be used by the Necrons to silently slip into the webway itself, unleashing their legions of death to the cowering masses of the old ones. As they exposed the extra-dimensional labyrinth, the final assault of the Catan and Necrons could begin. They scoured its many twisting pathways, hunting down the final dregs of the old ones, until finally, at long last, their species was exterminated. And it seemed that the war in heaven had ultimately been won, with the gods of the Catan and their servile Necrons standing as the sole victors and lords of the cosmos. But the galaxy was simply too small for these two to share, and the scorned Necrons had long been biding their time, waiting for the precise moment where they may strike and take vengeance against the deceitful Catan. Thus, the Silent King, known as Sarek, sent a directive through his command matrices, ordering the entire Necron species to turn their weapons against the Catan, to overthrow the yoke of cosmic oppression, and to seek revenge for the traitorous actions taken during the biotransference. The arrogant Catan, surrounded by a species who they only saw as feeble slaves, could not have possibly grasped as to how the flames of loathing burned within their soulless vessels. The sheer hatred of Sarek led him to plan for the doom of the primordial ancients since he first emerged from the chambers of the biotransference. And now he was fully prepared to bring retribution and shake the very stars themselves. Simply killing the Catan would have been too easy and far too kind. So the Silent King ordained for a far more insidious punishment to befall the gods. He sought to capture rather than slay. He wished for the Necrons to tap into the impossible energies of the Catan, transforming them from once mighty gods into entrapped tools who would serve the undying legions until the very end of time. The first to be claimed was Azagorod, the Nightbringer. Utilizing a colossal orrery known as the Eye of Cathanta, the Necrons illuminated the deathly Catan under the gaze of the celestial many, incinerating its shrouded cover and shattering its corporeal form. The god fell into a dazzling burst of shards, drifting through the void, and thus did the primordial entity who witnessed the birth of the universe finally fall. The next was Mefret-Ran, the Deceiver. The architect of the duplicitous biotransference and culprit to the great fall of the Necrontyr. This god was to be broken and exposed to all. It is said that as the underhanded entity fled, that the Necrons summoned forth the artifacts known as the Singing Spheres, and through their harmonic melody, the many lies and tricks of the deceiver fell to pieces, shattering into innumerable shards, all to be claimed by the vengeful legions of the undying. Even Magladroth, the Void Dragon, greatest of them all, was not to be spared. During the prior war, the Eldari god of the Forge, known as Vol, had done battle with the Cosmic Dragon, producing an army of Iron Knights, who in the 41st millennium are known as Wraith Lords, to counter the terrible creations of the Star God. But this was not all he had done. Eldari legends tell us that the God of the Forge crafted a series of incomparable artifacts known as the Talismans of Vol, which were tied around the Void Dragon's neck to weaken, or at least cripple, its abilities. Whilst Vol was ultimately unsuccessful in his own attack, it was through these talismans that the Necrons found their own victory. The enigmatic shackles had opened up, exposing a blazing light, which was said to reveal the final weakness of the Void Dragon to the Necrons, allowing them to finally shatter and banish this monstrous, draconic god. Nyadrazatha, the Burning One, who breached the confines of the Webway, engulfing it in an apocalyptic conflagration, too, was brought low. Records do not speak of the final battle, aside from a single etching upon a single wall, which reads that it was in fact the Silent King Sarek who embedded his gleaming spear into the very heart of the Catan. The warpath of the Undying Legions continued, unhindered by the growing chaos of the galaxy as they shattered each and every Catan they found, containing their stray shards within immense tesseract vaults, from where they could be used to fuel great cosmic weapons, elevating the Necrons to a position where they themselves may stand as gods to all. There was one Catan, however, who was not to survive the war. Long-forgotten legends say that the figure known as Landugor, the Flayer, was instrumental in formulating the precise methods for committing the biotransference, and so perhaps this god, above even the deceiver, could be seen as the ultimate culprit who reduced their species into its soulless state. Thus, for these crimes, Sarek ordered for the Mainark dynasty to utterly destroy this Catan, not wishing for its taint to ever again stain the galaxy to any degree. With their grim task in mind, the Necrons obliterated Landugor, levying the powers of a dying star to eradicate the abhorrent god. But, as many of you may know, this was not to be the true end of the Flayer. In their final moments, the star god unleashed a malign curse upon the Necron species, which would manifest as a condition known as the Flayer virus, forcing its victims to endlessly seek out hot flesh to consume, to sate a ravenous hunger which will never cease. Yet, as the final Catan was felled, it seemed as though the Necrons had been successful in performing this most impossible deed. The ancient, primordial star gods, beings who had existed in the first moment of our universe, were now shattered, broken into a position of servitude, from where they would never again be able to coalesce and threaten the galaxy once more. In their eternal prisons, the Catan are said to burn. They simply linger as an endless scream amidst an empty abyss, locked in a state of impossible agony forevermore. They break open again and again, as though their fragmented souls were fractals, cracking and collapsing outwards, shattering into new, ever smaller pieces of themselves. Yet, even with this, their torment is insufficient. The noble lords will never forgive nor relent in their torturous treatment of the Catan shards, and by all accounts, I believe that these primordial star gods will be forced to remain within this state until the universe itself blinks out of existence, trapped in a realm of pain enforced by the soulless legions of the Necrons. As the war in heaven came to its end, and as the Necrons sealed the final Catan within an enigmatic tesseract vault, it seemed as though the slaves had finally ascended as masters. The star gods were now broken beings whose existence would simply be one of debased agony, their very energies being drawn forth from to power the unfathomable weaponry of their new lords. It is rumored, however, in the Eldari Tome of Mournful Night that there may in fact be one Catan who was able to evade capture. Their ancient lore reads that Sara Noga, the Outsider, had been fooled by the Eldari laughing god Segorak, whose mysterious riddles and enigmatic tricks had led the star god into a state of utterly deranged madness. In this cosmic stupor, the Outsider was too dangerous to approach, as it seemed to exude a field of mind-warping terror. Yet the Necrons would not have to come close, as Sara Noga simply vanished from existence, never to be seen again. Some speculate that this god may have destroyed itself in their state of madness, whereas others believe that it simply escaped to another dimension, and that one day the Outsider will return, sound of body and mind, ready to take vengeance on the Necrons for exterminating the star gods from existence. But regardless, though the galaxy had now been scoured of its primordial gods, it still remained as a most hostile realm. The enslaver plague was running rampant. The Eldari were forming their own empire in the wake of the Great War, and even the Kroks were spreading out through the stars, but without the support of the Old Ones, they were markedly aimless in their expansion. Even so, The newly ascended Necrons were all too well aware that their brief time as galactic rulers had come to an end. Though immortal, they had still been utterly battered by the back-to-back conflicts of the war in heaven and of their rebellion against the Catan, and they could not possibly hope to remain in the galactic limelight whilst these lesser species rose to power. Thus, the last of the Silent Kings, Sarek, led his species into the shadows. They were to reform their many dynastic territories into great subterranean tomb worlds, which could harbor the entire Necron species for a seemingly endless duration. Here, they would wait out the devastation of their era, resting and recuperating with the expectation that the many sentient horrors of the stars would soon die out due to infighting. The ultimate plan was to eventually emerge at a time where the galaxy was ripe for the taking. In a perfect scenario, there would no longer be any vast, star-spanning empires to oppose the relentless spread of the Necrons, and the undying legions would be able to sweep out across the cosmos, once again reclaiming all which they had lost for the glory of their dynasties. But fate is a fickle and ever-capricious beast. Legends say that the Necrons remained within their cold slumber for around 65 million years, but in that time, the galaxy had not grown fat and complacent, and instead, it had become an iron bastion. The Eldari Empire had taken its course, rising and falling, but the enigmatic children of the stars had remained as an eternal enemy to the Necrons, with the tales of the war in heaven still persisting as fabled myths told through the captivating performances of the Harlequins. The Kroaks, bereft of a true war to fight within, fell to disorder, and over the long years, they had degenerated and regressed from the weapons of the Old Ones into none other than of the Orcs. Though, as we all know, green is best, the Orcs were a complete downgrade from the Kroaks in almost every regard. They were smaller, weaker, less intelligent, and generally more crude. But perhaps in the chaos of the 41st millennium, this may instead act as a benefit. Much to the relief of all, however, the enslaver plague had been wiped out during the Necron time of slumber, freeing the galaxy from the insidious scourge of these most malign beasts of the warp. Perhaps the most interesting development throughout the stars was of the curious tree-dwelling mammals previously seeded by the Necrons with the pariah gene. Upon their nondescript continental world, the ceaseless march of evolution had passed, and these creatures were no longer simple primates, but instead, their distant descendants had slowly yet surely changed into becoming the first members of mankind. Only in the relatively recent period of galactic history did humanity attain space flight before eventually rising to achieve its own golden age and galactic empire. But this rapidly collapsed due to the chaotic civil war of the Horus Heresy, and in its current state, it has been left as a rather stagnant and insular realm, led by blind fools who fear all which may go bump in the night. There are many other species which found purchase within our galaxy during the Great Sleep, including the young, star-faring Tau Empire, the extragalactic invaders of the Tyranid Menace, and of the curious, mercantile squats of the Leagues of Votan. With the rise of so many alien empires throughout the stars, it may seem as though the Necrons have emerged at the worst possible time in galactic history. And whilst this point is debatable, we must remember that the cybernetic legions have been bolstered with the powers of the very gods themselves. None of these ignorant, pathetic species could ever hope to truly contend with the race who shattered and shackled the primordial Catan, and their claims at holding true stellar empires is nothing short of offensive to the Necrons. Nevertheless, the Immortal Lords, now once again active within the 41st millennium, are more than happy to lead their dynasties to shatter these pathetic vestiges of the dying races of the galaxy, and they will do so with the forced aid of the now servile Catan. During apocalyptic conflicts, it is not uncommon for the Necrons to unleash bound shards of the Catan as weapons of war, primarily using the fragments of the Nightbringer, Deceiver, and of the Void Dragon to devastate their foes. Though they are far weaker than they were during the War in Heaven, even the smallest shard of a primordial Catan is powerful enough to topple an entire world. Yet they are always kept on a short leash by their malevolent, undying masters. But thus ends our tale on this most cataclysmic of periods in our galactic history. Truly, we have never witnessed a conflict which could ever possibly contend with the raging destruction levied during the War in Heaven. And unless the Golden Throne itself falls silent, I do not believe that we ever will again. It was a reality-shattering war, pitting the primordial gods of the universe against an ascended, soulless race. But ultimately, the newly formed Necron legions were successful, and they now stand as the immortal masters to reality itself, set to once again claim the galaxy for themselves. With the return of the Silent King Sarek to our stars, the Necron species appears to be attempting to find a method for reversing the biotransference to restore their souls once more. But only time will tell to see if they are ultimately successful. To my dearest friends, I thank each and every one of you for listening to this mythic fable in its entirety, but it is once again time for me to close this chapter and bring us to our end. And for now, I must wish you all a fond goodbye.